going on here? Do you all know that everybody here worked for Judge Givens? No? Okay. I suppose I should say that then, because I'm... Yeah.
And I believe counsel and I both attended the same law school.
Well, I wanted to make that representation because obviously we should disclose. But it looks like it's even with Gibbons on both sides, so that's good. Caitlin was Judge Gibbons' law clerk in my ex-term, so she might... No, I'm kidding. And we have over here... Okay, your name?
Shannon.
Sorry. She was just the ex-term. Sorry, just slipped my mind. And she was his ex-term last spring, right?
Yeah.
So, nice to see everyone. All right, no, the parties don't have any problems either way, right? Wonderful. Okay. All right, and we do want to thank the Pro Bono Project for the next case, which is Four versus State of Nevada, case number 72847. I'd ask the attorneys to state their names for the record. Would you also need any rebuttal time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Sure. That'll be the order.
May it please the Court, I am Stephen Yohei on behalf of the appellant, Byron James Four. Your Honors, I'd like to make 3 points and respond to the issues that were laid out in the notice of the argument. Specifically, the document which was mailed to me or emailed to me, which I forwarded on to Mr. Four, does not make this case moot. It does not even begin to satisfy the criteria this case, this court set forth in its earlier decision as to the amount of information Mr. Four is entitled to in order to determine whether or not to return to the grievance procedure which has so frustrated him so far. In fact, the document really tells us nothing. It is precisely what you anticipated. It's round numbers and not much else. How anyone could read the document, and this is a supplement that the state submitted with the Supreme Court's permission, I assume Your Honor's have it. How you can tell anything from this document is beyond me. It simply lists dates of service. Everything else is blacked out. You can tell the service was done outside the prison, but that's it. How Mr. Four is to evaluate this intelligently, and I'm putting aside for the moment the question of how and when he got it, and whether or not he ever got it from the state, and apparently only got it from me, for the moment, because I don't want to get sunk into that issue right away. But the main point is, all this states is totals and nothing else. So the state still has not revealed to Mr. Ford much of anything, specifically not what this court ordered, which was at least, quote, at least a general description of the medical services. That's not here. And all these years, the state has still not revealed that to Mr. Ford. Second,
does he have though a grievance procedure through the prison then, rather than the district court? I mean, wasn't this just? I mean, they complied with our order by filing the notice of compliance. Why doesn't he then have to have the initiative, I suppose, of continuing on with administrative proceeding and exhausting those remedies?
Well, several reasons. First of all, the notice of compliance made a representation, which turns out the state cannot substantiate by its own admission that he'd been given, quote, a breakdown of the medical costs. It's not so.
Well, I mean, here's the problem, okay? I know that this case has a really procedurally kind of odd background here, but going to the merits of what you're trying to argue here, in the end, what Four is entitled to is a balancing test, right? There's his rights, but there's also the prison's interest in security, which, you know, they may have really good reasons not to put very specific things in medical bills given to an inmate relating to the inmate that he stabbed in the prison. And as we sit here right now, no one has done this factual analysis. No one's even taken testimony on why the prison is reluctant to give more information. Maybe there's good security reasons. We don't know. You're asking kind of us to assume, well, it seems like you're asking us to make our own findings, or you're asking us to assume that there is no reason, and we don't have any basis in the record to reach either conclusion, or do we?
That was my next point, Your Honor. You're being placed in the role of the district court by the way the state has behaved in this case. The district court judge who dismissed the case against Mr. Four made no findings, even though he had your order.
But I think this goes back to Chief Judge Silver's question. Why didn't Four pursue an administrative grievance remedy or file some kind of motion in the district court to ask them to make factual findings?
Well, he did that. He did that, and he appealed initially to the Supreme Court, which sent the case to this court, and this court made direct.
We remanded it. The prison then gave him another document and forwarded
it. Did
what?
It did not. The state has admitted in its response to our motion to supplement the record that there is no documentation to prove its assertion that any document was ever given to Mr. Ford, including, and why wasn't this document, if the state had it, why wasn't this shown to the district court when it filed a notice of compliance? It provided the court with nothing.
Well, but hang on, because my understanding of the record is this. The state filed a notice with the district court saying that they had provided Mr. Ford with something, okay, and granted no copy that was attached, but in response to that, Ford did nothing. He didn't say, I don't know what you're talking about, I didn't receive any document, what is this? He just sort of sat on it, and then 6 months later, the district court finally said, okay, nothing's going on in this case, I'm dismissing it.
As I said in my reply brief, first of all, the notice, as a procedural matter, was not a motion to summary judgment, for example. So there was no time limit for responding. It was not a summary judgment motion, so that there was no time limit for a response. Second, since it wasn't anything in the form of a motion, it was sort of a unique pleading, in my experience. As I understand the rules of civil procedure, a pleading to which no response is required is considered as a matter of law denied. And, of course, I don't mean to harp on the fact, Mr. Ford, of course, was an indigent prisoner. And so, while I recognize that the law applies to prisoners as well as anybody else, nonetheless, that is a factor here. And I would suggest that the district court had a special obligation here to see whether or not to ask the state to demonstrate, and they could have done that in camera, have you complied, state, with what the Court of Appeals told you to do.
Isn't it on Ford to make that request?
I don't think the burden is on him because the state didn't file anything which triggered that kind of an obligation.
Now, if he was down, this is the 7th Judicial District, very small, county or district, I'll call it. I'm not sure if it's a couple counties in there. Yeah. You might know. Is it a couple counties?
Yes.
Yeah, he knows. He's rural.
Well, you have White Pine County. That's where Ely is.
It's got a couple.
So we also have the Lincoln.
It's a very small, clearly a small district. But in the 8th, you have like 10,000 cases on your docket. You don't know what's in each case. And when there's inactivity, like what happened here with your client, albeit in prison, but when there's inactivity, we routinely in the 8th, will close out files administratively when there's inaction, which is what struck me in this. Nothing happened. That your client did nothing. Granted, let's just assume they didn't really do much, but they filed some notice of compliance. When we make law, we make it for the entire state, which obviously a lot of our appeals come from the 8th. How would you expect in the 8th to do anything less than what happened here, which is the district court sees inactivity and closes the case out? That's exactly what would happen here in the 8th. No different. In fact, I wouldn't even do it. It's administratively done. They pop up on the screen, old cases, and your secretary closes them out.
Well, I have several responses to that. First of all, we can't escape the fact that the representation made to the district court was not so. I'm not intending to cast aspersions on counsel. I specifically refrain from doing that in this case. But the fact of the matter is, and counsel has admitted, the representation wasn't true. Nothing had been given to Mr. Ford. Second, in this case, I would say is a special case. This case had been before this district judge before, and the judge had commented that, if the state had just given him some medical body of information, this whole case would go away. So I would submit that this court was on special notice in this case, and that you have to watch out for what the state is doing here. And third, this court had said in its order, we're troubled by the fact that it was 8 years since the initial attack occurred. And therefore, I would suggest it was special notice to this judge that we really need to take a look at this case. And that would distinguish it, I would suggest, Your Honor, from the routine kinds of cases you've been describing. This judge was not a stranger to this case. He already saw, had been demonstrated to him, that the state was not being responsive and has stonewalled Mr. Ford in the grievance procedure. So while in the ordinary case, I understand the burden of being a judge and having floods of cases coming at you, he was, I would suggest, on special notice that I better take a look at this one. The last point I'd like to get to.
But how is the district court to know that the inmate is not then following procedures through the administrative process? If there's no activity, isn't it also just as reasonable to conclude with the inactivity that he's then taken whatever they said was complied with, those documents, and filed with other grievances through, what, NRS 209? Well, why not? That's just reasonable, too.
Well, but the point is that we're all speculating what was going through the district court's mind. The judge didn't state any reasons. And so how you as an appellate court can review that decision is beyond me. On what basis do you conduct review? If you had made a statement, with some sort of a statement, as in the order, even a sentence, this court would be in a better position, I would say, to evaluate the reasonableness of what the district court did.
Can Mr. Forrest still make his complaint through the administrative process?
He can, and that was the point here. He was to be given, according to this court's order, he was to be given enough information to decide whether or not to return to the grievance procedure. And he has not been given that information. Ultimately, your order has not been complied with.
So let's say it was a detailed report. I mean, what really is that issue here? If you have $91,000 and the money's being taken out of his inmate account and only $50 has been taken out, I mean, where's the issue on this? Is he suddenly coming into millions and he's worried about his account's going to be depleted?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that this case goes beyond Mr. Ford. And that's one of the reasons we press the issue of unlimited restitution. I mean, the state has said in its response to one of his grievances, not only will you be responsible for this $91,000, but whatever else happens to this inmate, presumably for the course of his life, you're going to be nailed. You're going to be charged. And they're not going to give you any information to support that. So, yes, I mean, you can ask the question, what difference does it make? But it obviously does make a difference as a matter of principle and as to the way this process is administered in this state. I mean,
what he really needs to know is, are the bills related to the original injury?
Well, that's one of the things he needs to know. I mean, this document, if it had been presented at trial, wouldn't even be admissible. It's not authenticated. What is the foundation for it? Where did these numbers come from? He's entitled, and this court said it, at least a description of the medical work that was done. At least, quote. And that least wasn't satisfied here.
I'll give you another minute since...
Well, the last point I'm going to make
it again.
The state relies on a statute that...
To stop now and take that 5 minutes, or do you want to keep going?
I'll just take another minute.
Okay, go ahead.
The state relies on a statute that says it is entitled to impose reasonable restitution. Right. If the case had been in court, NRS, is 176, would have prohibited ongoing restitution. It's very clear, a whole line of Supreme Court cases. Botts, Hewitt.
But even this is a prison. This is all prison regulations. Once you start shanking people in prison, these are all administrative proceedings with restitution throughout the prison. It's not, we never even come to court for us to sit there beyond a reasonable doubt, make sure it's reasonable. It's
reasonable.
The prison.
Thank you. That's the word. The statute under which the state is proceeding in the prison allows reasonable. Mm-hmm. Restitution. I would submit this is not reasonable. It's 8 years later.
Thank
it's
you.
Unsupported. $91,000 is a lot of money. 8 years. What happened to the person who was stabbed in those 8 years? Is all of it? We don't even know whether Mr. Ford's attack is the proximate cause in tort terms of what happened to the prisoner 8 years later. Was he a smoker? Did he do something else to hurt himself?
Right, but here's the problem. Aren't these all factual findings that we can't even make here?
And that's what the district court didn't do. That is precisely what the district court didn't ask for. And that's right. What I said earlier was you're being placed in a role that the Court of
right.
Appeals does not belong in because the district court didn't lay anything out. The bottom line is the only reason Mr. Ford ever saw this document is because counsel sent it to me, and as a matter of professional responsibility, I mailed it to him at the prison. Otherwise, there would be no proof, at least none that the state has shown so far, that he ever got the document. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, let me introduce Shannon Zamm, as you all know, who has been wonderfully assistive in this case.
Thank you. And she's with Legal Aid, right? With Legal Aid right now? No?
Pro bono.
Pro bono.
Good morning, Chief Judge, members of the court. I'm Randy Gilmer here on behalf of the Department of Corrections. At table, as you've already indicated, is Deputy Attorney General Brady, who assisted me in mooting for today, and I appreciate her help in that regard.
What do you say to that? I mean, what do you say to his argument that, you know, this is 8 years later. We don't even know if it is the same person that they stabbed or if any of these medical injuries can relate back to that stabbing. It's like 8 years later. Doesn't an inmate have a right to know what is going on when they're assessed $90,000 in medical bills?
Thank you, Your Honor. I have at least two answers to that question.
Okay.
The first answer I would say is I would analogize this to a situation if you have a car accident in the civil liability realm or where somebody brings a lawsuit and then they have medical bills associated with that. Or even in the criminal context, if somebody stabs somebody and they end up getting charged with assault for that stab, for instance, and 8 years later that individual happens to die and there is a medical finding that he died as a result of that stab wound, he could be charged with homicide. I mean, it happens in the criminal context, and like I say, all the time, because it is a rare circumstance, obviously, that somebody...
Yeah, but even in the criminal context, you still have restitution hearings, and judges still make determinations of whether or not restitution is appropriate. So there are findings which are not here.
Well,
so how do you...
Well, with regard to that point, Your Honor, I do think that there are restitution findings, and as this court indicated in its initial order, and the one thing I do agree with counsel on is that this court's order wasn't agreed to, but that's because Mr. Ford didn't do what this court told him to do. Because your opinion also stated he can then determine whether to pursue a further grievance, period. And that was that's at the record at 388 of your opinion. After he receives the documentation, he can decide whether to pursue a further grievance. And the very purpose to pursue that further grievance is to have that exact restitution hearing and factual findings that Mr. Ford is complaining.
But they're saying all you did was file a notice of compliance and that none of those documentation of what you're claiming the medical records ever even got to him in prison. So what proof do you have that it did get to him and that he then dropped the ball?
Your Honor, the proof that I have is that we filed the notice of compliance. I mean, that documentation was filed.
Why didn't you file the notice of all of the documentation with the medical bills and just redact it so that you really show you're in compliance, not just you're saying you're in compliance?
Well, that's...
Why wouldn't you do that?
That's...
Or file it under seal if it's medical records.
Those would be very good questions, Your Honor. I didn't have the case. I didn't work in the office. I don't know why that wasn't done. But what I do know that was done was that we filed a notice of compliance with the court indicating that we provided the documentation that this court told you to in response to the court order on November 20th, the district court order telling us to do that. It was done. At no point did Mr. Ford tell the court that he never received it.
Well, maybe he was still waiting for it.
Well,
maybe he was waiting for the docs. You file a notice of compliance. You didn't file the medical bills.
Well, we didn't file the medical bills.
Or medical whatever records.
That's certainly true, but they weren't filed with the district court. The district court obviously could have asked us to file them. The district court took the notice of compliance at face value based upon the fact that we're officers of the court telling them that something was done and the fact that Mr. Ford never contacted or told the district court that he didn't receive it. In that respect, Mr. Yahweh indicated that it wasn't a pleading or a motion and he didn't know that he could respond. Mr. Ford, the record indicates, prior to this case,
if I had a dime for every time an inmate said they didn't receive something, isn't it up to you, the government, to show that that was done? That you really did comply? Why should any, we did an order that said you need to comply.
And
when you just say we complied?
Your Honor, I believe that if a deputy attorney general, a barred member of the state, whether any attorney for that matter, whether they work for the attorney general's office or elsewhere, tells the court, files a document with the court that says notice of compliance with order that specifically states plaintiff has been provided a copy of a breakdown of medical services rendered and the cost of each service for medical charges assessed to his account. I believe that that is evidence. I would take issue with Mr. Yahweh's position that the court didn't make factual findings here. They did make factual findings here because in the order dismissing this case, which was on March 31st, the court said the appellate court found NDOT was required to provide more information. On September 30th, respondents entered a notice of compliance, which indicates NDOT has provided petitioner with a breakdown of medical services rendered and the cost thereof. That's a factual finding. The district court accepted our notice of compliance and agreed that there was no reason to take into account whether or not the attorney that was on the case was making a flat-out misrepresentation to the court. And especially then, as it goes on to say, on October 11th, respondents filed a notice of entry. Nothing further has been filed. The district court had no reason to believe that the attorney record in this case told them, I mean, there's no other way to say it. It would be a lie. I mean, to believe Mr. Four, it would mean that the deputy attorney general lied. And the district court
or maybe just got busy right after and thought he knew. I mean, there's a lot of things. It doesn't have to be a lie. It could be a mistake, too.
Except
and it, or it could have been lost in the mail. There could have been a million other reasons, and then what, they don't get the letter of compliance with the medical record. So it's not necessary that the attorney general's lying. It's just how do you prove somebody actually received a document just based on a filing like, I complied?
Well, I mean, arguably, you know, hindsight being 2020, I certainly wish that the Department of Corrections had made a notation of the fact that Mr. Four had received this documentation. Obviously, we wouldn't be here.
Because we can also say circumstantial evidence would say that when an inmate quits writing, they're waiting for something.
Well, but I...
That happens all the time, too. Or they would keep writing.
Sure.
And they would keep filing, because that's what they do. When the ball's generally in their court.
Certainly, Judge. And at that point, I would point out that the notice of compliance indicated that he had been provided the documentation prior to it being filed. But yet, at no time up until, that was filed in September. The court waited until March to file a dismissal. So in that 6-month period of time, at no point in time did Mr. Four reach out to anyone to say he hadn't gotten it, including the court. And with regard to Mr. Yahweh's point that Mr. Four didn't know he could file something with the court, he filed at least four requests for status check prior to this court getting it the first time. And on remand, he also filed something with the court asking that they take action with this court. So Mr. Four was not somebody who was afraid to file what might be called the rogue pleading amongst attorneys. And as counsel and as the court is aware, and as you've indicated, inmates have, filing things is not generally the inmate's difficulty to do.
Let me ask you about the interplay between what the district court did and the administrative code. So your office filed this notice of compliance. In response to that, what should Ford have done? Should he have filed a new administrative grievance? Should he have filed a motion or an objection in district court? What is he supposed to do under the law?
I think he should have done exactly what your court order said to do. At that point in time, after he gets the information, he could decide whether or not to file a pursue a further grievance. That was the words from your opinion. I believe it's at page 8 of your opinion, which is in the record. He never did that. He has an AR 707 specifically talks about filing a grievance and how to do that with regard to the restitution. And I know they use the term restitution. I think indemnification is a better terminology, kind of back to my analogy of a car accident situation.
Well, the 8th also does a order show cause why a case should not be dismissed for want of prosecution. And that was not done by the district court here. Just dismissed it without any notice to either party. Don't you find that problematic?
I don't like to answer for what judges should do, but I would say, obviously, just as I wish that the NDOC had had some sort of indication when they had provided Mr. Ford the documentation, it may have been fortuitous or nice if the district court had given something else. But I would also submit that based upon what this court's order stated, there was nothing for the district court to do, because the district court's, this order said, remand this case so he can get that information. We told the district court that we got that information in the notice of compliance. Again, factual finding, he determined that that was accurate and a truthful statement. There was no reason for him to believe that with Rule 11 sanctions and potential disbarment.
Well, why is he generating his factual findings when there's no motion pending?
What's that?
Why is the district court generating factual findings when there was no motion pending?
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, except there was an order that the court had filed on the first order on remand, which wasn't called a show cause order, but it did tell the state to comply with what this court said to do under its mandate. So while it didn't use the word show cause, I would suggest that it had the substantive, you know, situation of being a show cause order.
But what authority did the district court have to outright dismiss this case? What authority?
The authority was, I would submit, and again, I'm always very careful when I'm not telling the court how I read what their previous opinion says, but your opinion said this document should be provided. Once it's provided, Mr. Ford can then decide whether to further proceed with his grievances. So this court, I would argue, indicated in its previous opinion that once that documentation was provided to Mr. Ford, his remedy was to file a grievance under the PLRA as required. So the district court saw that the documentation had been provided pursuant to the notice of compliance.
But what if it wasn't provided? Let's say it wasn't provided. You filed a notice of compliance, and as they state, he never got it. And then the case gets dismissed. We're here.
Okay.
And then he just loses. I mean, that's it.
No, well, at that point, Your Honor, again, I guess we can just say we don't know if we got it, okay? I mean, we have a notice of compliance on the record that says he got it. Mr. Ford never said anything below that disputes that. So I do have to push back a little bit on a self-serving statement on appeal right. that he never got it, because he never filed anything below that said he never got it.
So, okay. Mr. Yelmer, is it true that none of this really matters because he can still file his administrative grievance? And the only issue we're talking about is the type of evidence that he would have at the grievance hearing. He can still raise all the legal issues. He can say it was 8 years ago. There's no proof of causal connection. All they have is some document that I didn't see, but it's blacked out, so no one knows what happened then. I shouldn't have this restitution ordered or indemnity ordered. 8 years later. Isn't all that still available?
Thank you, Judge Gibbons. That was going to be the second point to Judge
Chief. How does he prove it? Just a question. How does he get, if he hasn't gotten those documents, and I don't know, or the documents are as bad as what he's alleging, mm-hmm. how does he prove then his case administratively, which is what the district court was supposed to do in the first instance?
Well, at this point, he does have the documents. Mr. Yahweh conceded he has the documents. This court should have a copy of those documents because they were provided as part of the supplemental record. So he does have those documents at this point in time. So back to Judge Gibbons' questions, I would think at this point in time, obviously there's tolling issues and statute, but I would think that the case has been in court. So I haven't looked at the issue, but I would argue that just similar to when you're seeking grievances for the first time, that would be tolled. So I would argue that he could still do that. I mean, I don't see why he can't. It's been in court. We've been waiting. But I think that's the point here. Mr. Ford has not followed the mandate of this court, not the state. Because even conceding, and I'm not conceding, but for purposes of this, hypothetically, he never got it. Mr. Yahweh contacted me. I provided it to him within a week. And I told Mr. Yahweh that if there's any other documentation that I discover that shows that he received this information, I would pass it along. There was never any concession that he never got it. The notice of compliance says he got it. The only thing I don't have is anything from the Department of Corrections saying that they provided it to him. There's thousands of inmates. They have provided things literally on a daily basis. Now, we can talk about administratively whether they should or shouldn't have, but the fact that there's not a documentation that's signed that said that he received this is not evidence that he did not receive it. It's just evidence that would have obviously been helpful for me not to be here today. But the point is, he hasn't. So that goes back to the mootness argument at this point in time, because we complied. Whether we complied at the district court level or complied after Mr. Yahweh contacted me asking as a professional courtesy that I provide him with a copy of it, it's been provided. He has it. He can file a grievance. He hasn't. And that's where I think we're here today, and that's where we're at. And I think this court acknowledged the fact that the grievance procedure had to follow, go forward because of the due process concerns, and that the district court acknowledged that the PLRA is where this has to be. So once he has a notice of compliance, the court has a notice of compliance indicating that it's been provided. At that point, it moves to the grievance procedure. And as Judge Gibbons indicated, he can make all those arguments before the grievance procedure, properly grieve it, go through all the levels, and then he can file a new lawsuit and be where he's supposed to be. I do think I need to briefly touch upon, if there's no other questions, I do just want to briefly respond to what exactly the document has, and you have the documentation as part of the supplemental appendix that the Supreme Court indicated we could provide. But on page 8 of your opinion, or at least a general description of the medical services rendered and the cost for each services. This is what it provides him with. It informs Mr. Ford where the medical services were provided, outside provider or inside. It notes whether he was seen by a nurse or a physician. It provides the monthly totals expended for the treatment And it notes that he was specifically being charged this amount in restitution based upon 209-206. And I talk about it at length in my brief at pages 30 and 31 and also at 15 and 16.
Does it show causation?
The medical document that provided to him does not show causation. However, there was already a record from the previous time from the doctor saying that this was the result of an old stab wound, quote, old stab wound. So
I have been previously given to him.
What's that?
I'm sorry, a document that had been previously given to him, is that what you're saying?
That was a finding in the first time around that the doctor said that the reason why the charges were brought were an old stab wound. I see that I'm out of time here, so if that answered your question.
And nothing happened during the ensuing 8 years that contributed to it? It was just the stab wound?
I'm not a doctor, Your Honor. I just have what the doctor says, that it was a stab wound.
That's what they really need. The amount of the medical bills, to me, seems not the issue, because he's not going to be able to pay it anyway. The issue is causation.
And I think that's why we need the grievance procedure. He can raise all those issues at that point in time, I would argue. I agree with you. Medical bills, I can't understand medical bills in the outside world. I see them. I think that they're outrageous. But at the same time, it said an itemization of the room. We provided that. We said who we saw, doctors, nurses. I think it complied with the order. Mr. Ford has not complied with this court's order. Unless there's further questions, I will sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to make one thing clear. To my knowledge, none of us have ever seen the doctor's notes. They're not in the record. I certainly searched for them. I know the court in its prior order recited that the doctor had made a statement about an old stab wound, but to my knowledge, that record that's not in the record. I don't know what that doctor found. I don't know if he related it to the prior stabbing.
Isn't that the point of, I think, his response, which is then open another grievance? The prison certainly got that stuff.
Well, but Mr. Ford's been there and done that. He has already gone through the grievance procedure. And he was stonewalled. He was told by the Department of Corrections, we're not giving you anything. He appealed to the Supreme Court. This court found that he was deprived due process. Let's not forget that. He was deprived due process unless he is given at least a general description of what happened. And that still has not happened.
The question is, I mean, we all understand what happened before, but now we're talking about a different document. Now, I know you're saying that new document still does not comply, but the question is, who's the fact finder to determine whether that complies or not? And his answer is, well, the fact finder is the grievance process. That's why it's there.
It should have been the district court, I submit. To send Mr. Ford back to the grievance process, where does he begin? Frankly, you're putting him back in the position he was before his case was heard by this court.
But what law gives us the authority to say, district court, you're the one that, another grievance process at that point.
Well,
judicial district court judges would love to start combing over medical records for inmates who are grieving restitution.
Your Honor, with all due respect, what the Department of Corrections said to the district court is, we win. And that's really all they said. How I wish I could have done that in 43 years of practice. We win. I'm not giving you anything in support. I'm not giving you an affidavit from anybody at the prison to support my representation to you. Just take it at face value. Again, I specifically refrain from questioning the good faith of counsel. I don't know what happened, but I do know that the representation of the district court was not so. Okay? And then on the issue of how you deal with the issue of, well, we don't know at the date of the stabbing what's going to come later. I know it's a different statute, but in Botts, the Supreme Court said the way you deal with that is you have an evidentiary hearing to predict, as you would in any damage situation, present and future damages based on evidence. But after all these years, how many years has it been since Mr. Ford first tried to avail himself of the grievance procedure? Are we going to go around again? And if we go back to the district to the grievance procedure, will this court give more direct instructions?
Well, I know. Hang on. I mean, this is the argument that I presume he would make if he had an opportunity to rebut to you. You're talking about time, but the advantage of the grievance procedure, the reason why we have administrative procedures is because expertise. Those are people who deal with this kind of thing all the time, and district courts don't. They know what prison security procedures are, and district courts know a lot less about it, so why don't we go to the people with expertise? Yes, it's going to take more time. That's the function of it, but isn't that why we have the administrative process?
And that's the process that the Department of Corrections just, frankly, ignored. I mean, he had that right the first time he filed a grievance. And what the Department of Corrections said to him was, we're giving you nothing. Now, if we go back to the grievance procedure, what assurance do you have, if having already told the department to be more forthcoming, that they're going to give them anything meaningful? I don't know where that's going to come from. I would suggest to you that this case has gone on long enough. Mr. Ford has been at this now. This case has been before the Supreme Court, before your use court, now it's back again. I would suggest it is time to tell the Department of Corrections, first of all, this to-be-determined restitution is not appropriate even under your own regulations.
Okay, we can't... I mean, we're looking at a district court order, not telling the prison anything. We're looking at a district court order today on this appeal.
Okay.
So you're going much farther than...
Well, Your Honor, raised this issue was specifically raised in the notice of hearing, and I'm addressing that, which is if the prison was unauthorized to impose to-be-determined restitution in the first instance, we wouldn't even be here. This whole case would have gone away. As Your Honor pointed out, had the case been in a court, which it's not, granted, to-be-determined restitution is not permitted. That's what the legislature has told the courts. You can't do that here. This case, I think it's you or Botts, told a court, you cannot give the department permission to continue to impose restitution as time goes on. Apparently, the Department of Corrections has power that a district court would not. I'm suggesting it's time to grapple with that issue.
Thank you. Thank you. Your time's up. It's two minutes over. Thank you.